The World Health Organization estimates that there are more than 300 million blind and visually impaired people in the world today, and they have long suffered what's been called a book famine. Of the approximately 1 million books published annually, just 5% or less are ever converted into more accessible formats. This summer, however, after 5 years of negotiations to work out copyright and economic issues, a treaty was finalized called the Marrakesh Treaty to Facilitate Access to Published Works for Persons Who Are Blind, Visually Impaired, or Otherwise Print Disabled, or more easily just called the Marrakesh Treaty. Its goal is to end this book famine. The news of this treaty sparked our interest in what sorts of books and services are available to Michigan's blind and visually impaired residents. For the answers, we turn to Ed Rogers, the first director of the state's new Bureau of Services for Blind Persons. Himself visually impaired, Ed began his discussion with Mark Bayshore by outlining what reading materials are available here in Michigan.
There's your traditional things such as John Grisham novels, college textbooks, mathematics, law school materials, medical school materials. And usually we've had cooperation with the authors and or the companies that are the publishers with copyright law compliances, et cetera. So that has not been an issue. But there is, you know, a worldwide population of about 300 million blind people. And as such, the Marrakesh Treaty is going to help facilitate that. And I'm sure you're going to ask me about the Marrakesh Treaty, which was signed in June of this year, June 28th. 186 nations agreed that there needed to be expanded accessibility for blind and legally blind individuals to printed materials without infringing upon copyright laws, such as copying the materials and then selling them for profit.
Was this evidence of a worldwide book famine? There's a demonstrable shortage of these materials to go around.
There clearly is, and I think after several years of study, the United Nations was the mover and shaker, so to speak, of making sure that these materials become more readily available, and thus we ended up with the Marrakesh Conference, which resulted in the Marrakesh Treaty, which was, like I say, 186 nations signed that on June 28, 2013. Now, from a United States standpoint, clearly now the next thing that has to happen is that the United States Senate has to ratify it, because if you recall, under the Constitution, treaties have to be ratified by the Senate. Even though the Obama administration, the president, the White House has signed off on it.
And there are some barriers to that, though, as well. Tell us about those.
Well, some of the barriers are clearly the cost involved, depending upon where the materials are located. If the materials, for instance, are overseas, there's going to be additional cost, although I think eventually that's a hurdle we will overcome. It will also take several years, like any law or treaty, to implement so that the materials become more accessible. There will also be a need for continuing education or education of publishers and authors so that they understand how this treaty impacts on their works once they've produced the materials or written the materials. You'll also find that clearly, though, the treaty, once people understand what the treaty is and understand what its requirements are, will actually serve as a protective device for authors and publishers also.
What kind of impact would the treaty have here in the state of Michigan?
It will allow some of our voc rehab clients and some of our students who are receiving professional or voc rehab training to receive materials that may be printed in other countries but not available in the U.S. And I think, for example, in the area of technology, where the Japanese have a variety of manuals and text dealing with certain types of communication devices. I mean, they produce most of the TVs and the cell phones, et cetera, in the world now. And some of those materials that would be used by our students, either in voc rehab training or in college, are not available right now. So this will enhance our ability to be able to take those materials and reduce them to either large print copies and or allow us to print them in Braille.
Can you give us a good working definition of the phrase visually impaired?
Visually impaired generally means that an individual falls below the legal definition of what legal blindness is. We have two type of clientele. We have the low vision, and I would fall in that category. I'm a former client of the agency way back in my days in the late 60s and early 70s at Michigan State. I received assistance from the program. And if you meet that criteria, then under federal and state law, you meet the criteria to receive our services. We also, besides low vision clients, have clients that are totally blind or will be totally blind.
The Bureau of Services for the Blind is a new entity. Just last October you got started. Can you tell us how the new Bureau came about?
Well, there was a point where there was a breakdown in the services and the delivery of services by the former entity, which was called the Michigan Commission for the Blind. Michigan Commission for the Blind was abolished by the governor. It was a 7-panel board that was appointed by the governor or prior governors. And it's very difficult to run a state agency such as ours when you have a board always overseeing what you do and with oversight where they can change some of the decisions made by the executive director. So it had reached a point where it had broken down, and the governor felt that it was time to take a different direction where there would be a single executive director responsible for the performance of the agency rather than a politically appointed board. And I think his decision was correct, and I think you already see evidence at our agency level that we are being much more proficient without having an executive board that can second guess or veto anything I try to do. We do have an advisory commission, which is also appointed by the governor and made up of individuals who are either in the blind community or offer blind services.
Our guest here on Current State is Ed Rogers. He's director of Michigan's Bureau of Services for the Blind. You have quite a number of programs that you do oversee. Tell us about a few of them.
Well, we have approximately 6 major programs that make up our budget and our staff utilization. Our biggest piece is the vocational rehabilitation, which is about 80% of our budget that we receive from the federal government. The purpose of vocational rehabilitation is to take those individuals who are, quote, in the job market range, which would be 18 to approximately 65 in age, and try to work towards a goal of making them productive working members of society. We also have an independent living module that helps with older individuals, 55 and older, that as they get older, their sights diminish, they may have multiple handicaps, they may have mobility issues, but yet they're legally blind. So we help with lifestyle issues with them. We also have a youth low vision program, which is made up of such items as summer camps for kids ages 14 to 26. We also have an assessment program that we carry on the beginning of every summer to assess where our youth is going. And we start at age 14 and start assessing goals and realistic pathways for them to travel. We also have a business enterprise program, which is regulated by an act of Congress called the Randolph-Shepard Act. This allows us to expend money and equipment to help blind individuals be part of the program and offer food services in either state or federal buildings. The law does allow like a similar exemption to the veterans exemption, that if there's a food service facility in a building that's a federal or state building, preference is given to the blind entrepreneur.
Now, politics gummed up the operations of the business enterprise system in the past, correct?
That's correct. And I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, so to speak, from prior administrations. There were lots of issues. Money was being spent without any tracking, without any accountability. Some of the facilities are not viable facilities. I use the example that there was a facility in the Hanna State Office Building, which houses the Department of Education. That facility was not generating enough income to warrant keeping that facility open. And then we have the Library Services for the Blind, which we deal with large print materials, braille materials, taping materials. For example, I'm a customer of the Library for the Blind. Every month I get on a disc, which I put into a player, which is the magazine that's put out the Michigan history. and I love Michigan history.
Mm-hmm.
So I listen to that particular book, even though I can read and have vision to read. I enjoy listening to the Michigan history on the cassette tapes that are provided by our library.
Now, is there also a bricks and mortar library with Braille materials in it?
There are Braille materials that are housed in the state library, which is in downtown Lansing. We have a large collection. We also have, and the number is about 20, sub-regions, which also have some materials, some classic materials that the blind community would use on a regular basis scattered throughout the state. But we're reaching a point where we have what we call, Mark, a decade that we're entering that we'll call Library Without Walls. And we put on a program every year now. We've already had one this year because the wave of the future is not buildings and not walls and not bookshelves. It is clearly computers and tapes and discs and that type of material.
You must be acquainted with some, familiar with some powerful stories of helping people who've lost their vision later in life. What comes to mind?
Well, you know, recently, a couple months ago when I was visiting the training center, I ran into an individual who was an entrepreneur up north. And he had a business that included like 19 or 20 grocery stores throughout the UP and throughout northern Michigan. And he had lost his vision as an adult of about 50 years old. And he had gone through our training program at the training center, which I was about to mention before this question. So that's a good way to get into the training center. He was learning basic skills. For instance, if you or I lost our sight today, one of the first hurdles we would encounter is eating. You use your eyes whenever you eat.
Mm.
You look at your plate. You look at your food. You look at the French fry. You look at the salad with your fork. If you lost your sight today, you'd have to learn some skills on how to eat without getting your salad all over the table and all over yourself.
Yeah.
He learned computer skills. He learned some Braille. He did want to learn some Braille. He learned some mobility skills. And when I met him, it was his last day at the training center, and he was on his way back up north to take over running the family business. He had one or two of his adult children involved also. And the feedback I've got from him is it's been very successful so far.
Outstanding. Tell us a little bit more about the training center then.
The training center is a full-scale 24/7 operation in Kalamazoo, Michigan. It will house between 25 and 30 students at a time. It's in a dormitory setting, so they're there 24/7. They work on all the skills that I just mentioned, lifestyle skills, computer skills. We even have some specialties, such as we have shops where they can learn to deal with skill saws and other type items as either a possible profession and or just as a hobby. People like to do woodworking. We teach Braille there. We teach the mobility skills. We teach time management skills. We do a lot with computers. That's the wave of the future. We work with the new technology, such as JAWS, which is a program that can be put on a computer so that a blind person can have the computer read to him what's on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows you to do emails, internet, etc.
You mentioned you are visually impaired. Were you visually impaired as a young person?
Yes. I was born with an underdeveloped retina. I also have another disability that we don't class as a disability in this country, but I believe it is, and that's being colorblind. If you look at a computer screen, the computer techies insist on making everything look pretty and colorful. But there are certain colors that I can't see on a computer screen, such as a light blue or gray.
Okay.
So if they put some writing in light blue or gray, I have a real problem reading it. It looks like the screen to me.
What has changed most dramatically during your lifetime in terms of support and technology for the visually impaired?
If I said one word, it'd be computers. The computers and the internet and emails have opened up the world to the blind community. We are now able to reach out and touch other people in ways that we couldn't before the computer age. I would have loved to have grown up and be 18 years old and have a computer when I was in high school that does the things it does now.
Ed Rogers is the director of the Michigan Bureau of Services for Blind Persons. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.